News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
You're welcome to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. Coming up in the next half hour, the threats and opportunities posed by the fintech revolution for established Irish financial services companies. The Private Hospitals Association call on government to help them provide more healthcare facilities, and we review latest developments on the markets. First, though, a look at some of the stories making headlines this morning. Joe Brennan in the Irish Times writes that shares in Bank of Ireland have fallen by as much as 10% since the government announced plans late last month to proceed with the flotation of AIB. Dealers have put the weakness down to some large investors taking money off the table to be able to invest in the initial public offering of AIB. Kieran Hancock writes in the Irish Times that former Connacht rugby player Stephen McKenna is to take over as chief executive of Sherry Fitzgerald, Ireland's biggest estate agents, from July 1st. He'll succeed the company's co-founder Mark Fitzgerald as chief executive. Mr. Fitzgerald, who owns 40% of the business, has held the role for the past 35 years and will continue as the company's non-executive chairman. Turning to the Irish Examiner, Steen Jacobson writes that the top firms in California's Silicon Valley carry more weight on the global stage than many countries, which makes building diplomatic relations with them increasingly important, the world's first national technology ambassador has said. Chosen to fill what his country's foreign ministry has dubbed the first tech-plomacy, posting on the US West Coast, Denmark's Kasper Kling will be tasked with building direct ties between his country and the likes of Facebook, Apple and Google. And finally, turning to the front page of the Daily Telegraph, Peter Foster writes that David Davies and the European Union last night quashed hopes for a soft Brexit as formal negotiations on leaving the EU finally got underway in Brussels. The Brexit Secretary confirmed Britain would be leaving the customs union and the single market in a move designed to scupper any parliamentary plots to water down the terms of the UK's withdrawal from Europe. It's just 6:38. You're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. The majority of Irish financial service providers expect to lose very substantial amounts of revenue to the new generation of innovative fintech operators over the next 5 years. That's according to a research survey carried out by PwC. And Ronan Fitzpatrick, Director of PwC Advisory, joins us in the studio. Ronan, according to your survey, it's a global survey, but you also survey a significant number of Irish firms here. They expect to lose up to 40% of their revenues. That's a really significant whack, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it's a big number. And really, the number, I suppose, reflects a couple of things. One, it's a reflection of that the survey is carried out across a range of the financial service institutions. So it's asset wealth management all the way through to private banking. So there's a mix of people in there and a mix of types of firms that will be disrupted. And also, I suppose, the 40% is over a five-year period. So they're not saying that 40% is going to disappear, in one big bang next year. So it is spread out across. And that material is there just to see that there is a range of revenue that will be lost and in the mix.
But if that prediction turns out to be accurate, I mean, it even over 5 years, it would have very significant impact on strategic planning. The amount of employees even that they have, the amount of resources that they require.
Yeah, and I think that the strategic planning part of it is one that comes out through the context of the survey as well. We see that's really the area where the large financial service institutions are looking at the fintech and the partnership piece, So we're seeing three real things in the mix there. We're seeing the convergence, seeing the financial service institutions looking to partner with more of the fintech companies. We're seeing, I suppose, the benefits realisation piece as well coming through in the survey. And then we're seeing a couple of places where Ireland is lagging behind the global indicator as well in that space.
Now, many of the Irish firms that you survey suggest that they believe that they are relatively good at innovating themselves, but just have no skills in commercialising that, and therefore have no option but to partner with fintech companies.
Yeah, I think the classic piece on skills and the availability of skills comes up across a variety of industries, and certainly we're seeing that. But I think in the financial services sector, we're seeing, yes, generating ideas isn't an issue. Commercializing those ideas and bringing them to reality is proving to be a problem for firms. And again, I think we see, that's alignment of your strategic portfolio of initiatives and how you get that in order. But I think some of the fintechs will naturally be better in smaller sectors of that space. Again, we see the large issues for the large financial service institutions are the amount that they have to spend on remediation of platforms to keep in line with regulatory and the next round of regulation. I mean, that's quite a burden on those firms, and trying to keep up with the emerging technology is very, very difficult.
On the other hand, a lot of fintech companies, small and nimble as they may be, need access to the kind of capital, I suppose, and indeed even the customer bases that, that larger institutions can bring.
Yeah, and I think the capital and the customer base is probably even more important to someone than the capital. In the customer base and the knowledge that exists within the large financial service institutions to help bring their product to market and make it more relevant. I think certainly that's where good synergies can exist between the organisations and the mix of being nimble and with the knowledge that the large FS houses have can be a very compelling proposition.
And yet inevitably a number of these smaller fintechs will become large players themselves. I see Klarna, the Swedish fintech, has got a banking license, a very significant sized company, has got a banking license in Scandinavia this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people think of fintech and they think, you know, two guys in a garage, but that, you know, that's not the case. I mean, some of the fintech organizations that we've seen like are really, really big now, you know, and will grow, and they're growing on the back of, I suppose, you know, they're built in the cloud, they're built with all the data points built into their platform from day one, and that helps them get closer to the customer. So they're trying to solve a need in a way that they can do quicker than others. That's the trick.
The service seems to identify that asset management and insurance companies are particularly vulnerable to fintech innovation. Why is that?
I think in fintech, traditionally, if you can say it traditionally in the context of fintech, but what started out, you know, was funds transfer, and I suppose the areas where the direct peer-to-peer type solutions could be offered more quickly. I think asset and wealth management, you know, this is one of the areas where I see Ireland lagging when it comes to the AI space versus the global
artificial intelligence.
Sorry about that. So we see asset and wealth management, the potential for robo-advisors and, you know, the artificial intelligence, the key to artificial intelligence is making good decisions faster. So taking all of the data points that are available to you and making good decisions. And that's got great potential in asset wealth management, I think.
Finally, Ronan, do you believe that most leaders of financial services firms here right across the sector are sufficiently aware that they've got to adapt to this new revolution, partner or fight them in some way, or die?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's the fight or flight is a classic piece in this space, but I think most have recognised now that, you know, initially the piece, and this is a part back to the commercialisation piece, initially there was a discussion on how do I get this stuff out of the lab. Now it's how can I partner with people to help me deliver a better solution. So recognising the customer need, delivering a better solution and delivering it fast, that's the key to this for all the firms.
Okay, interesting indeed. Ronan Fitzpatrick of PwC, thanks indeed for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Vince.
Now, the owners of the country's private hospitals are ready and willing to invest in additional beds, operating theatres and other acute healthcare facilities, but need greater support and clarity from government to do so, according to the Private Hospitals Association, which holds its annual conference in Dublin later today. Chief Executive Simon Nugent is with us in studio. What sort of clarity and support are you looking for here, Simon?
We're looking for clarity from government as to what is actually the future of healthcare in Ireland. Minister Harris last year set up an all-party Oireachtas committee to give a 10-year perspective on healthcare. We thought that was a smart thing to do because we really do need long-term clarity as to where one's going with Irish healthcare policy, if either the government's going to invest or indeed if private operators are going to invest to make sure that they're going to treat the patients who have, of course, changing healthcare needs as the population ages. So what we're saying is the Oireachtas Committee, that committee Minister Harris set up, published its report a few weeks ago. And what we're saying is that now is time for government to respond and to address the questions of, is the government going to invest, for example, in substantial additional bed stock over the coming years? Or would they like to see the private sector doing that? Is the government going to continue to treat insured patients in public hospitals, or are they, as the Oireachtas Committee suggests, going to disentangle the system and look to private hospitals to take on more of the burden of treating insured patients? Is the government going to tackle waiting lists itself, or is it, as it often hints but doesn't actually get into the practice of implementing, is it going to ask the private system to move efficiently, safely and with care to treat those patients and knock down those waiting lists?
Now, later today you're going to tell your audience that the midterm review of the government's capital plan is an ideal time for that clarity to start emerging. That seems to imply, because of the capital plan, that you may be looking for some of the of the government's capital to help you invest.
No, I mean there are an awful lot of pressures on the government's capital plan, and we're still in a situation in Ireland where we're constrained economically by European Union budgetary rules. The new Taoiseach is going to confront demands from his Minister for Transport, his Minister for Housing, his Minister for Health, and all the others for resources over the coming years. Some of that, of course, should be spent on hospitals. It will be spent on hospitals. We already know, because there's been a long-term planning, that there's going to be spending
but
on...
But are you saying it should be spent on private hospitals?
No. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is, if you're competing with us in markets which we can respond to, if there are patients who you want to treat and therefore you don't want us to treat, don't want us to treat, then that's obviously going to have an impact on our investment strategies. We will be investing over the coming years. I estimate over the next 4 years, private hospitals will invest €300 million on new equipment in theatres, on replacing their bed stock, in new treatment resources. And we're looking a lot at innovation at our conference today, and new treatments that are being offered in the private system that aren't available in the public system. But we can do more. We can invest more if we have that long-term certainty that says, OK, for the next 10, 15, 20 years, there will be patients being encouraged into private hospitals because they're insured patients, or because the government is prepared to pay private operators to treat those patients very efficiently and provide good value for money.
Effectively, are you calling on the government to clear the field for private hospitals to treat privately insured patients, and not to muddy the waters as things are now, an intermingled surface where some private patients go to the public system and, as you would say, get badly overcharged there?
Well, yeah, quite a lot of insured patients are currently treated in public hospitals, perhaps half of them. So that's quite a lot of competition, if you want, in the market. If, as the Ructis Committee has suggested, that is reduced as time goes on, that we disentangle the public and private systems and make sure that insured patients in public hospitals don't get priority because they've been pumped up some sort of internal list in that public hospital, then we have a situation where we will have where private hospitals can treat more of those patients and will step up to the mark, will boost their capacity so as to be able to treat those patients.
Why not step up to the mark anyway? If your members, and many of them have deep pockets, if your members are sufficiently confident of providing the latest technology, the best facilities, won't privately insured patients just go to your facilities anyway rather than to public hospitals?
Oh yes, many of them do, absolutely. But you'll hear...
So why not just compete without that clarity from government?
Well, but we are absolutely competing without that clarity from government all the time. I mean, you know, patients, we provide half of the elective procedures provided in Ireland today. We employ more than 8,000 people working in private hospitals across Ireland. There are 19 hospitals right throughout the country actually delivering care to patients from our association at the moment. We are absolutely competing, and we're doing a good job on it. But if the government persists in incentivizing public hospitals to prioritize privately insured patients over the rest of the patient cohort, that's effectively unfair competition.
And you believe they're incentivizing there because the public hospitals need that source of funding?
Yes, and that's what the Oireachtas Committee concluded.
So you're hoping for this clarity at the midterm review of the capital plan?
Yes, we think that's part of it. I mean, the other thing, of course, that's happened is that in nominating Minister Harris to be the Minister of Health again, the Taoiseach explicitly said, Taoiseach Redcar last week said, that he was asking the Minister to provide a solution, a response to the Oireachtas Committee report, and to set out targets and plans for the coming years. And the Minister is opening our conference in about an hour's time, so we look forward to hearing about that.
Very briefly, Simon, one area of finance that might come into the system generally, the sale of VHI?
Yes, we certainly think there's an opportunity there for the government to put this VHI now on the market. It's a very valuable government asset. It's not necessary for the state to be in the business of owning health insurers of this country. We have a good competitive market amongst health insurers, and it would liberate funds for the exchequer, which could be spent on beating down waiting lists or other priorities in the healthcare sector.
Simon Nugent, Chief Executive of the Private Hospital Association, thanks indeed for joining us. It's 6:54, and Ian Quigley of Investec joins us to review markets. Ian, the Nasdaq and tech stocks generally in the US pushed strongly ahead again yesterday after 3 days of dips. It seems to be this kind of a trend that if there's a dip for 3 days or less, the market surges on again.
Good morning, Vincent. Well, the lesson over the last few years with tech stocks has been to buy the dip. If they have been very strong, and as you mentioned over the past week or so, there was a bit of a correction, and they arguably could be vulnerable to a bit of correction just because they performed so well over the last number of years. They are dividing opinions somewhat in terms of valuation, in terms of future prospects. But you know, when we look at the valuations for the vast majority of, again, companies that are pretty well known now, they look okay. They look okay on valuation metrics, look okay on cash flow metrics when we look at them.
So fairly priced or a little bit toppy?
No, I think they're probably pretty reasonable because, again, to a number of companies that people know particularly well now at this stage, they have, in terms to use the Warren Buffett term, an economic moat, large companies that have enormous market share and have large network effects. And if you look at them on forward multiples, you look at them on most valuation metrics, they look okay when you take into account the very high levels of growth that we see across the sector. Now, it is nuanced. There are some companies that have potentially run away with themselves and where valuations have become somewhat stretched in terms of could be vulnerable to disappointment. But on average, the tech sector looks okay in terms of valuation.
And could continue to drive things ahead for some time?
Yeah, provided, if again it can deliver earnings growth and deliver cash flow growth. And there are a number of companies that are continuing to do that.
Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting, I suppose, in Amazon's case, to see how they integrate that fairly large bite they took out of the food sector last Friday.
Yeah, Amazon continued to disrupt with the great disruptors over the last few years, both in retail and in cloud computing as well. You know, Amazon is a trickier company to look at from a valuation perspective because it is expensive. And investors are implying pretty extraordinary future revenue growth and cash flow growth, but again, Jeff Bezos has been able to deliver that. Mm. It's less when you look at the other companies. You know, when you look at Google and Facebook and so on, their multiples are less stretched. But again, these companies are pretty unique characteristics. And Warren Buffett was actually quoted on this exact topic recently.
He's beaten his chest and said he should have got in earlier, shouldn't he?
Yeah, it's just saying he'd almost never seen companies like this before. You know, if you go look back to the great titans of industry in the past, they required a lot of capital to deliver returns. These companies require almost no capital, so the returns on capital are extraordinarily high. And then for an investor today, it's all about how sustainable they are. Yeah.
Coming back to this side of the water, European stocks generally, and even UK stocks, boosted by I suppose, broadly speaking, by Macron's strong victory in parliamentary elections in France?
Yeah, and at the beginning of the year, there was obviously concerns about European elections in terms of which way the electorate would go and whether we would go on a more populist route. And shifting towards the centre and centre-right and the potential for reform in France has been a positive surprise. You know, in Europe at the moment, economic growth is, I think, helping push back the tide of populism somewhat. And Macron has certainly capitalised that. But remarkable when you reflect upon the fact that his party didn't exist a year and a half ago.
Mm. And as you say, in January we're looking at possibly both Holland and France going the way of the populist route.
Yeah, and perhaps we were a bit battle scarred in that in terms of what's happened in elections over the last years, because the probability of that was always quite low. But beneath the surface in Europe, there is some discontent, and I think it'd be, it's positive development in terms of how those elections have panned out. But it'd be naive to say that's gone away. But as we look at it at the moment, European growth is improving, employment trends are improving, so that kind of, that helps in terms of people's engagement and less disillusioned, if you like.
Finally, the FTSE 100 in the UK, I suppose it's not necessarily tied in at all really to the performance of the British economy or politics, but largely the market kind of ignored the start of Brexit talks yesterday, didn't they?
Yes, yeah. Well, and in the FTSE 100's case, about 70% of the revenues, when you look underlying companies, come from outside of the UK. So as he says, an international index. Sterling pretty much unchanged as well. Again, nothing particularly startling at the beginning of the negotiations, and there really shouldn't. Again, opinion is becoming somewhat divided in terms of what the UK election means, whether the outcomes are more binary or whether it's going to have a more inclusive approach to Brexit. We'll see.
Only time will tell. Ian Quigley of Investec, thanks indeed for joining us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning.
News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.